Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, the University of Maryland in the US has just announced it has halted fraternity and sorority events because of concerns over hazing, some of which have led to serious injuries and even death. What exactly are they, though? Larry Donnelly is law lecturer at the University of Galway and a columnist with the journal .ie. Afternoon, Larry.
Good afternoon, Sean.
These organisations always sound like the Masons or something to me. It's kind of weirdly kind of old-fashioned. Are they based on some sort of Greek idea?
Yeah, I mean, they take their letters from, you know, the Greek alphabet. That's how they're identified. And they do have historical roots going well back. Indeed, the first fraternities in the United States are a couple of hundred years ago they were formed. And look, there are a couple of different ways you can look at them. And I know I have a lot of friends who were involved in fraternities or sororities. They will say very good things about them, that they made lifelong friendships, that they made the adjustment to college or university a lot easier, that they helped them professionally, et cetera. But there is definitely a big downside to them. And the hazing that goes along with joining a fraternity or sorority, in particular around alcohol and the absurd consumption of alcohol in a very short space of time, has raised an awful lot of eyebrows. I actually thought they had cleaned up their act, but this news today shows they haven't.
Yeah. The way it works, if you join, and it's not all universities, but it sounds like it's the majority of them. When you arrive at university on your first day, you're given a particular place to live and you stay there.
Yeah, typically in most places, you're in a dormitory in your first year. And then, you know, in those first few weeks or whatever, there's a process called the rush. And during the rush, various fraternities and sororities have an open house, and you go to them and you socialize with the members and they get to know you. And if they like you, they invite you then to pledge for the fraternity or sorority. And that's where typically the hazing comes in. And, you know, some of it is benign. Some of it's kind of ritual humiliation, stuff that young people probably get a kick out of. But as I say, there is a dangerous side to it. And there actually have been hundreds of people who have died as a result of the hazing process. And the vast majority of those have been through acute intoxication, again, because some of these rituals involve colossal consumption of alcohol in a very short space of time. And again, a lot of these young people never would have drank before. So some horrendous things have happened. And actually, Sean, at some level, I'm still surprised that they're still around.
Mm, yeah. No, what happens if you're not invited to join a sorority or a fraternity? Can you be an independent contractor within college as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no compunction that you join a fraternity or sorority. And it very much is college dependent or university dependent. In some institutions, the social life revolves around fraternities or sororities. I happen to go to a Jesuit college for my undergraduate. There were no fraternities or sororities, so we may do. And indeed, at other institutions where there is a big Greek culture, as they call it, many people don't bother. They see it as paying for friends at one level, for lack of a better way of putting it. But certainly, you know, they are there. They are a part of university life. And I don't mean to be totally downbeat about them because, again, a lot of my friends would say that it was a hugely valuable part of their college experience, and the associations they've made continue to be lifelong associations. Mm.
And are you, once you become a member of a sorority or fraternity, is it the case you're a member of it for life?
Absolutely, very much. I mean, one of the things that happens every year on both a formal and informal basis is, even if you've been out of the college or university for 40, 50, 60 years, would be these sort of reunions on an annual basis where, you know, you really still are a part of that family, for lack of a better way of putting it. And indeed, these fraternities and sororities thrive in many respects. And indeed, if you looked at some of the houses they live in, they're actually quite palatial. And that's based on donations from very wealthy graduates, again, who would value that relationship. And there is this is a real cultural nuance of the United States. And I think it also flows from the sort of special relationship a lot of Americans have with their university, with the place they went, that, you know, having lived here for a long time, it really is unique around the world. I mean, sure, graduates here would have an affinity, but they don't take it to the same extreme, I think, that it's taken to in the United States. Mm.
And at the, you know, when we're in at the elite colleges and the sororities and fraternities there, you know, are you seeing kind of these organizations of, I happen to be a senator, you happen to be a multimillionaire, you know, and they all keep in contact and it's all great.
Yeah, I mean, certainly at the exclusive universities, I think for whatever reason, Yale University is a standout on this front. They have these more secretive, you wouldn't call them fraternities or sororities as such. They're more like secret societies. The Skull and Bones is one that comes to mind. You know, for instance, in 2004, both George W. Bush and John Kerry had been members of the Skull and Bones Society. And of course, that's prompted a whole bunch of theories about what actually goes on in these. And indeed, Kerry and Bush were asked about it. And perhaps the one thing that they united on was that they would not divulge anything about what they did in the Skull and Bone Society because they're sworn to secrecy. And again, these are, it's really funny to look at from the outside and say, how do these things continue? Yet they do. And indeed, in the case of the Skull and Bone Society, some of the richest, most powerful people in the world were members of it.
Yeah, that's not at all worrying that two really high-profile politicians were members of the Skull and Bone Society and won't say what they did. Someone says, I did a year at UCLA in Berkeley, and a lot of my friends were members of frat houses. Some of the stuff they made people do as is crazy and illegal. A lot of it is sexual stuff. So it's quite dark.
Yeah, it is really, a lot of it is really appalling, Sean. There's no getting around that. Some of the things, and again, some of the, you know, the lads culture in particular in fraternities is really disturbing. And if you look at some of the negative indicators in terms of alcohol abuse, drug abuse, instances of sexual assault, there's a whole category of really negative stuff that goes with fraternities, which again, you know, continues to surprise me as to why they persist. But I think a lot of that is down to, as you were discussing a minute ago, these extremely wealthy and powerful people who value their experiences and again, continue to provide lots of money to the fraternities and sororities. But not only that, continue to provide significant financial funding to the institutions that they went to, and hence can exert an awful lot of leverage over the sustained existence of fraternities and sororities, and indeed head off at the pass attempts to abolish them.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see whether anyone follows the lead of the University of Maryland. Whilst I have you on the line, Larry, this is just broken in the last few minutes. That the U.S. Supreme Court has reversed the decision of the Colorado Supreme Court, and it says that Donald Trump can now be on the ballot there. I'm sure you're hugely shocked by the majority appointed by Donald Trump's Supreme Court would make such a decision.
I'm not at all shocked, and I'd be keen to look at the decision itself, but I have to say that I think it is the right decision. As much as I'm not a fan of Donald Trump, I think the legal theory that underpinned the decision in Colorado and indeed by the Secretary of State in Maine, I think it is deeply, deeply flawed. And I think that if the Supreme Court had accepted this, I hate to think of the consequences, but also I think the idea of politicizing access to the ballot, I think is a very bad idea. So I think Democrats need to focus in on beating Trump the old-fashioned way.
Larry, thanks a million for speaking with us today. That was Larry Donnelly there, law lecturer at the University of Galway and columnist with thejournal.ie.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.